the past 3 or 4 years, I represented several state and municipal entities. So those are both areas I have interest in and expertise in, and I look forward to bringing those to bear for this for the Point of Mountain.
Is this just like a regular BLM meeting?
And then I'll further kind of highlight some of our expertise that really isn't in part that is addressed in the group that we have here today. Obviously, you all know JC. I don't need to say much other than we are thrilled that she's with us and thrilled that she will be leading this team. The one thing you should know and understand is we have an extraordinary amount of experience in the public finance arena. And I have been personally involved in a multiplicity of litigation involving improvement districts and public financing issues. The other thing that I think we can bring to the table as you go through your planning for the area is the P3 public-private opportunities, which we have been instrumental in across the firm, and think we can bring that kind of expertise and insights to your group as you guys decide what is in its best interest and how you navigate that from a legal standpoint. So that's the team we have. We hope that and look forward to the opportunity of serving the needs of your group and are excited to see the development. I've been in Utah for, 40 plus years, and I remember playing in the whole area. And I think that the opportunities that this area brings is really quite extraordinary, and we look forward to it. So thank you for the opportunity.
Mark. That's all, Alan.
Well, thank you very much, JC and Mark, for joining us along with your team members, Steve, Todd, and Nate. And I hope that I remembered everyone. But I want you to know that I believe I speak for the rest of the board in saying that we are fortunate to have the breadth of your experience that you bring to providing legal counsel. This firm has not only a great reputation in the state, but well beyond the state borders. And so thank you for joining us today. And JC, thanks for inviting your team and introducing them. And let me just ask quickly, does the board, any members of the board have any questions for JC or the Ballard Spahr team? Not hearing anyone speaking, we'll move forward. But again, appreciate very much JC, you and your team being here today. So moving on, the next item on the agenda, you board members will recall us having a meeting back in January. It was at the Mountain America building. It was a retreat. We did some long-term planning. That was an official meeting. And so the board would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of that meeting that have been earlier distributed to each of you. I need a motion and a second, please.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
I believe that was Mayor Walker. Troy, thank you. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Was that April or Val? I don't know who came in first, but let's give it to April, Val, and we'll catch you on another one.
Deal.
Okay, seconded by April. Motion is that we approve the minutes of our meeting held January 15th of this year. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Let me ask again, are there any opposed? Not hearing, let's mark that as a unanimous vote in approving the minutes. They stand approved. So the next item on our agenda is we allow comments from the public. If there are members of the public that have joined us with this board meeting via Zoom, we'll give you a chance to speak up and make any comment that you would like to. And under our rules, a maximum of 2 minutes. So is there anyone here from the public that would like to speak? If you'd speak up, please. Not hearing anyone, we'll move forward to the next item on the agenda. A little bit of background for this item. This is to hear a presentation from our real estate consultant. We invite today and are honored to have Aaron Talkington of RCL Co. with us, who will be doing the presentation. You will recall last month involving yourselves in an extensive process to vet a number of proposals coming from entities who would have liked to have served as our consultant. And as a result of that fairly rigorous process, we selected RCL Co. to serve as our advisor, our real estate advisor. They are a well-known company, well-known in the real estate world for their professionalism, their ability to provide sophisticated analysis, and also their ability to see the big picture. As I mentioned, Erin is here today and will be presenting. Her title with the company is she is the managing director of RCL Co. And for your information, she will be our primary contact. We look forward to hearing Erin's presentation, and she, I believe, is going to present the path going forward. Let me just say this before we turn the time to her. I can't tell you, I don't know whether your board members feel the same way I do, but we've been at this for a while, and this feels like such an exciting time to finally get to the point that we are actually talking about moving into the planning stage. So, Aaron, I can't tell you how pleased we all are to have you here and to help us launch this next stage of the evolution of this board. So with that, Aaron, we'll turn the time to you.
Thank you. I appreciate the warm introduction, and it's great to be here with all of you this afternoon. I guess here virtually, but that's the kind of feels like here, given that we've been at this for a few months. I'm going to pop up a presentation in just a second, and I think that it will give you all a good sense of the roadmap going forward, both where we're really starting for the next couple of months, as well as where we expect to be over the next few months and over the next couple of years. Okay, just to check, does everybody have my screen at this point?
Well, does anyone not see the looks like first slide of her presentation? I think we're ready, Erin.
Okay, perfect. I mean, just advance it. So if it hasn't changed off of the pretty picture, or at some point it doesn't change, and you think I'm further along, just I won't take offense if you speak up. Great. So we're going to go ahead and dive right in, and I'm going to try to both, share a little bit of the technical detail for those of you who have some experience with the real estate development process, as well as a more conceptual explanation of the approach for those of you that don't. Our goal at the end of this is to help you all find a partner or multiple partners to help execute this development, and to provide clarity on the role that Ponza should be playing, how to evaluate these potential developers or partners in the future, and the long-term impact, how to balance the joint goals of economic development, both on the site and in the broader region, with, really executing a market-based strategy. And so the first year of that focus is really what we often call project definition. And that's important, because I think in your mind, you probably already defined the project, right? It's gonna, have all of these great elements to it, and we're going to build housing and office and retail, and let's get going. So I think the critical piece of the project definition, which really will happen in the next 6 months, is getting to the question of what the appropriate economic development strategy is on the site and how that influences the market opportunity. And so as part of that, you know, and we'll go through this in more detail in a second, you know, really our first workflow here, you know, starts with the question of what might that anchor be, how would it play out or influence the rest of the real estate development that might happen on site, and how does that flow through into all of the other things like, you know, financial analysis, deal structure, ways that you might transact, you know, the types of partners that are interesting and helpful for you all. We're going to very quickly get from that initial project definition into, you know, really kind of what it's likely to be an iterative process because the site is so large, of developer outreach, selection, negotiation. You know, and this is really kind of the second and the third phase. So while it looks here like it's a really linear process, right, you go 1, 2, 3, and then you hit an end, but in reality, we're going to do step one. We're going to get into, and steps 2 and 3 are probably going to circle back and forth a little bit, where you get to 2, 3, and you start implementing something, and then something else, you know, starts to enter the process, and you actually have kind of more of a cyclical and ongoing, you know, set of activity. And so, you know, part of that will be a formal RFP process, you know, either for a master developer or multiple development partners for different types of opportunities, you know, and helping me. You know, you all really sort, you know, source those and attract those potential partners and understand and evaluate them. And to, you know, where I'm happy to share more on, you know, the outlook going forward, I've put together a handful of slides to really focus on what does the next, you know, really 6 to 9 months look like. And within that year one, I think for those of you who were part of the interview presentation, you might remember this diagram. This is often how we describe, you know, that project definition phase, in the sense that, you know, understanding the market or the highest and the best use of the site is one component, you know, and for a developer working on 5 acres, that might be all of it. You know, in your case, you have 700 acres, give or take a little bit. And so there's also a question of feeding in this economic development and, you know, anchor question, as well as, you know, how does comms look into this, right? How do you all make sure that you're making decisions that are responsible with the site? So that's going to feed through this process of not just saying what's the highest and best use, but, you know, okay, how do we refine the program? How do we run some financial testing? How do we use that to influence what we understand about the market? And kind of really get down to a development strategy that optimizes or maximizes, you know, your impact on all of those different options and works for you as an organization. And we're starting with a good base of work. I know several of you are familiar with and were deeply involved in the development commission, you know, that recommended the creation of the land authority. And for those of you who weren't, just a quick recap of the work that was done. You know, there's really 3 phases of work. It included a market-driven growth scenario, which our CLCO and myself completed. At this point, that is about 2 to 3 years. That work is probably 2 to 3 years old. Which is out of date, but at this point, we think that it still provides a strong foundation for what the market opportunity look like, right? There might be, you know, a 10% better opportunity in certain places or a 10% worse opportunity on certain land uses, but that in terms of the long-term vision and the short-term picture of the opportunity, it's generally still suggesting the right direction. And so, you know, that produced several scenarios that we were evaluating in phase two. And some visual plans, you know, I won't necessarily call them master plans yet, but some visual diagrams of how that might actually be realized on the site and what that would look like in terms of where new development would go, you know, where roads would go, you know, how things might relate to each other. And so, and there was also a significant community outreach component of that process that was led by Envision Utah. And the last phase started to look at some public and private funding options, as well as the fiscal and economic impacts of this development. So needless to say, we're not starting at zero, but this was a very high-level look at this whole area that's shown in this, you know, kind of this oval on the left. And it included some specific programs for the prison site, but it didn't get into a ton of detail. So I think our job is to really build on that prior work and to take what we have, which is a good strategy and a good direction, and turn it into something really concrete that can be translated into physical plan, translated into a business plan, translated into an implementation strategy, and used to identify who the correct developers or partners are that might participate in this with you all. So there's really 7 elements to you know, this initial workflow, you know, that you saw is partly in that yellow diagram, but really are the first pieces of work. And so what we've done is gone through and evaluated, you know, for each of those, what prior work do we have to build on? You know, what's the need to update or expand it, which in almost all cases, you know, is at least, you know, a moderate need to update or expand. And what are the prerequisites to doing that work? And so this helps us organize these into a timeline. And, you know, we're really recommending, based on our conversations with Alan, that the first phase of work, which will really be the next 2 to 3 months, is going to have kind of two parallel paths. You know, the first one is going to take what we learned in the Development Commission work about the things that might drive significant economic development for the region and specifically for the innovation economy in Utah, and come up with a much more concrete direction on what the logical opportunities are for the site and how it would impact the real estate opportunity. I would love to say that in July we'll have a great idea that, you know, a certain university or a certain institute wants to be our partner here and that they're ready to hit go. It's always possible. Most likely what we'll have is a prototype where we'll really understand if we went with a certain strategy, what would the impact be? You know, what would the potential cost be? And what are the ways that it influences the other portions of the site that may, you know, in terms of the real estate opportunity going forward. The second parallel path right now is really to help Pombo as an organization have a better understanding of how it should function, what its role is going forward. You know, so that over the next couple of months, you know, you all can make decisions about, is there a need to hire staff? What type of staff would that be? You know, what advice are we going to need, you know, going forward on how to execute, you know, different types of transactions? You know, what can we actually expect out of this? And then that will flow into really taking a new look and a deep look at the market opportunity and the highest best use for the site. And what does the program, you know, for the site end up being, right? What's the mix of uses? What's the phasing? You know, what types of products are we talking about? Is it single family or multifamily or corporate office or, you know, a new headquarters or campus? You know, and that will all be informed by what we learned in this first phase. And accompanied by that will be some financial testing. So we'll really dig in and say, okay, what are the implications, you know, from a real estate perspective? You know, how much capital would you need to build this? What's feasible? How much land value does it produce? And how do you use those things to inform each other? And one of the things I've outlined up here is, you know, as you consider the, you know, need for when a master planner would be appropriate to bring on the team, you know, the RCLCO team does include Envision Utah and HOK, and to the extent that our work requires other subconsultants, you know, with you know, approval from Alan, we'll find the people that we need to have input into our work. You know, during this program refinement phase, it will be useful to have input from HOK, which is a planning firm that worked on the Development Commission work with us, to help produce some new visual diagrams of how those programs might fit on the site. Because what you find is that, you know, I happen to be able to think in numbers, but most people don't. And so, you know, even RCLCO needs a planner to really say, you know, this is how, you know, if you went with this variety of land uses or this strategy, this is how it might actually impact, you know, the way the site physically works and the infrastructure needs and other things that are going to have a big impact on cost and execution. And so, you know, that really will lead us, you know, with some of this more detailed financial testing into master planning, which we believe, you know, is appropriate to select a new master planner to really advance the site planning, you know, that for someone who could get started in the fall. And I've already started to share a little bit of the elements of the scope of work for these early work phases, and I'm not going to read this to you, we'll circulate it afterwards. You know, this first piece of the economic development and anchor strategy is really about figuring out, you know, who the potential candidates are, maybe not exactly what university, but, you know, is it a university, is it a research institute, is it a headquarters? And developing these prototypes will help us evaluate what makes the most sense here to pursue and how it will impact the other opportunities on the site. And that will involve interviews and discussions with local groups, interviews and discussions with People like Brookings and other research institutes that have a really deep knowledge, you know, over a lot of years of how innovation districts work. And also understanding how, you know, some of the anchors that might be models for what we'd like to create here got started. You know, the second piece that I think is really important is this organizational strategy. And this is really about how you as a public entity manage and execute the development, you know, of a large and complicated site. And so it's going to look at both the internal organizational needs to manage the project, you know, what role should the organization be playing in development? You know, what are the typical transaction or partnership strategies that are appropriate for your development goals, as well as the type of entity, and your capabilities that you have? And then how do you set up a framework for strategic decision-making going forward, you know, that helps you figure out where to start, you know, balance this need for progress, you know, and the first steps of development with your long-term goals and the desire to preserve long-term value? And how do you structure partnerships to make sure that you're prioritizing the safe goals? So that leads into, you know, what you are most familiar with, most likely, which is, you know, things like forecasting demand and supply and pricing and thinking about, you know, the different product types and, you know, timing of opportunities, you know, as well as what we'll call, you know, a variety of program hypotheses. At some point we'll have, you know, you'll have a page per program almost that says, okay, here's a diagram of how this might work. You know, here's what the timeline would look like. Here's the mix of uses that are all things that we might test as part of a financial modeling exercise. You know, that will really drive directly into this idea of building a detailed model that helps us understand if there is a difference in value in these different strategies and to refine the programs based on that. And so with that, I just popped back up this roadmap. I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you, Erin. Board members, questions for Erin? You all have your mics muted.
Just April.
April.
Yeah. I have a question. Erin and the board, is there also a time period? Is there also a time period where we get the public involved or do some type of public input early on, knowing that may not necessarily...
I've heard a little bit of your question. I'm losing you a little bit, April. I think... And I might have missed some of the nuance, but I think what you're asking is, shouldn't we be doing public engagement somewhere here early on?
Yeah, I was kind of asking, do we need to early on, and what you guys have seen with other projects, just so that we don't go too far down the line and we haven't included the public at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. There was a lot of public engagement done as part of the Development Commission work, and I think that in terms of if you were starting from complete scratch, you would want to have a process like that or a significant public engagement process like that, you know, from step one. Like my sense is that today, you know, while, you know, especially through this phase one of work, you know, we can really lean on what we've already learned from that process. And then, you know, in consultation with the other communication consultants, you know, that you all have brought on board, you know, probably sometime, you know, in the summer, as we have new information to share and new ideas, is the right time to go back to the public and get some input before, you know, anything is really fully baked.
And April, this is Alan. I might just say that in the next presentation from X Factor, we're going to hear a little bit more about that and how we'll sync up the communications and the analysis of design for the site. So you'll hear about more of that in a moment.
Oh, thank you.
Other questions?
I have one, Lowry.
This is Troy Walker. And I'm the last guy that can't believe I'm even going to say this. But timing-wise, phase one, with the exception of the great pandemic, I would have thought we were moving at a great pace. But my concern is what are we going to know really about this market? I mean, do you think we're going to know what this market has changed into? Is phase one maybe need to be a little longer? Or do we have some uptake time from what's going to happen going forward economically with office or, I think there are going to be big changes in the market. I just wonder, are we going to be able to capture that in phase one? Are we going to miss what the changes are?
I was just going to say, I agree with Troy's question that if everyone starts to do business differently too, does that impact, how much commercial space or how few people go to college and things like that?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Our expectation is that there will be some long-term impacts and that today we have some guesses at what those are. You shared some good ones, but nobody really knows. And, I think that's a particular challenge of, the exact timing that we're working with today. But it is a general challenge for all projects of this time frame. Not necessarily 20 projects in 2020, but projects, like yours, where the build out of the site is going to last for a long time. Because the market does change, not necessarily the way with the magnitude or the, kind of directional change, structural shift that, that I think we might have out of the current epidemic. But, one of the challenges of these projects is continually reevaluating, maybe we didn't, based on the information we had in year one, this was a logical build out. We get to year 10, we're like, actually the next 10 years are going to look different than what we thought. My expectation is that, by midsummer, there won't be certainty, but there will be much more direction. The cone of certainty will have narrowed where, we can start to rule out some of the things that might happen from an economic perspective. And at this point, you're not going to be locking in the idea that we're definitely going to build an office building in 2022 and it's going to be on that parcel. We'll start playing with ideas like that and thinking through how that works. But I think that there will be flexibility, through this time frame to incorporate changes that we start to see in the market and things that we anticipate might be coming from our current situation. And while we've really only shaded the yellow here, there really is a kind of a continual monitoring process with real estate and with economic conditions to say, has anything changed? Do we expect there to be big changes, and how should we think through that? So I think that's all to say, I'm sensitive to the fact that this is tricky timing to be making both short-term and long-term plans.
This is Val Hale. I would just mention, we're still having a fair amount of interest from companies, even at this time. We have in our go ahead board meeting Thursday, we have three companies adding 2,500 jobs here in Utah over the next few years. And there has been a bit of a slowdown, but most site selectors we talked to have said that they think, some companies are on hold now, but by the end of the year, they'll be back to pursuing, their plans to expand and to grow. Plus, we see a real opportunity to get some of the reshoring from China. I think there are going to be a lot of companies, particularly medical device companies and others, who've taken their products and manufacturing to China. And I think you're going to see a lot of those jobs starting to come back to the United States. So we're going to be very aggressive at going after some of those jobs in China to try to bring them back to the United States and to Utah. And those might be some interesting companies to put out at the point of the mountain. Mm-hmm.
This is April. I just wanted to input. I have a real estate company, an asset management company. And in some of our meetings, too, we've all been talking about we're still going to need a place for people to live, so that may drive some of this acreage more to a type of live telework arrangement. Since so many people are teleworking now, it may drive some of the acreage
more towards residential, but residential that really has like fiber optics and everything somebody needs to be able to really work well and communicate, not cut out, people can hear them. So that's kind of what we're seeing with my company on that end.
Oh yeah, thanks for sharing.
So Aaron, given the changing landscape, so to speak, of the market, and we're looking for things hopefully to settle down and settle in, we would anticipate having some regular input from you and your organization as we move along, so that we can monitor and make decisions based on you helping us understand that changing landscape.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a firm, we've been spending a lot of time ensuring that we have a good understanding of how things are changing, given the new information that's out there. And you know, I think our CEO would appreciate it if I put in a plug for our weekly webinar, which I'm happy to share with all of you for those who are interested. You know, but we really it is a focus of ours right now to make sure we have a very good understanding of you know, how the landscape is changing, and to share that with our clients.
As a follow-up to that, let me just say, looking at your timeline, in some ways that's a fairly aggressive schedule, but obviously you feel confident with that timeline. The input from a planning team, is that a planning team that you would contract with, or we would have a relationship with based on your recommendation? How does that work?
I envision that the input in August would be from a planning team that we subcontract with. You know, in this case, you know, most likely a group called HOK. They worked on the development commission work, and so they already have all the base models and understanding of the site. And so the getting up to speed, you essentially would almost delete the like getting up to speed phase that a new planning firm would have to have, just have some basic input. And so they should be able to give us some direction and some, you know, kind of quick, you know, easy to use, you know, drawings or input as needed during that time frame, with very little, you know, cost or effort to get up to speed, because they already know the site conditions really well.
Okay. And then Aaron, at what point along the way, or is it at that point, that your organization takes into account, say, for example, transportation issues? Is that something you look at all along the way, or is there at some point you give a more intense look at that?
You know, I would say that it's all along the way, but the points in time where there's points in time where we'll be taking in information on that, and there's points in time where we'll be making recommendations or making suggestions about ways in which the transportation infrastructure might need to change to accommodate what we're talking about. And so, you know, up front, I think generally we're taking in information, although I know that one of the priorities that's not on this, but we're going to you know, kind of handle as a small project, is to help you all think about the transit options that are proposed through the site. And that'll happen in the next, you know, month or so.
But you'll be a part of that.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Our role will really be to help evaluate and help you all understand the implications for the real estate side, you know, given different transportation scenarios. And, you know, we have a really good relationship with Fair and Peers in Utah, who has done a lot of the prior work on this site and in the Point of the Mountain area, you know, who if we needed to bring in to do something more specific from a transportation perspective, we could.
Okay, thank you. Other questions from members of the board? Well, Aaron, thank you for your presentation. Thank you for joining us and for being our advisor and consultant. And we look forward to an ongoing relationship, and I suspect regular communication at our board meetings, updating us so that we can hear about progress. And I assume there will be some decisions having to be made by the board along the way as well.
Yeah, I think both of those are true, and I hope that the next time, I'm not sure if you guys are on a monthly or a quarterly board meeting cycle, but for sure if it's quarterly, I hope the next time we get to meet us in person.
Okay, thank you. We hope so too.
Great.
The next item on the agenda is a presentation by our consultant that we have finalized our contractual relationship with, X Factor. And with us today is Muriel Sochi Mill. And Muriel, can't tell you how grateful we are to have you and your organization on board. And maybe some of the board members are aware that Muriel and her team has already begun the process of getting input from board members as well as other stakeholders. The public perception of our work is incredibly important and related to our success. So we look forward to Muriel and her team at X Factor in assisting with that. All of you will have the opportunity, if you haven't yet, to be interviewed with Muriel and her team. I know I went through that process. The questions I was asked are really insightful and required a fair amount of stepping back and thinking about what I perceive as the vision and the future of the work that we're doing. And if you haven't had that, if you have had that experience, you'll know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, I think you'll find it really stimulating and helpful. So without saying a lot more, Muriel, we'll turn the time to you and to introduce any of your team that's with us, and then look forward to your presentation. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Representative. We really are excited to work with you all on this important opportunity and appreciate your trust and confidence in us as we get this going. So just briefly, as Representative Snow mentioned, my name is Muriel Sochmill, and I am president of X Factor Strategic Communications. We will be supporting you with the PR and communications for this project. And I will just briefly turn it over to my team. We'll go Colton, Maddie, and then Lauren to briefly introduce yourself.
Perfect. My name is Colton Stock. I'm a communications specialist here at X Factor Strategic Communications. I'm a graduate from BYU. I studied public relations and business management, and I've worked at PR agencies all down Utah, so I'm excited to jump in on this project and see how we can use your perspectives to move forward.
Thank you.
Perfect. And I'm Maddie. I am also a communications specialist along with Colton here at X Factor. My background is in public relations as well as digital and social marketing. So I'm very excited to be part of this Palmsley group. I wish we could all be meeting in person, but I'm sure we'll get to know each other soon enough, and I'm really excited to hear all of your viewpoints and communicate those to the world. So excited to meet you all.
Hi, I'm Lauren Avery Mead. I'm a communication manager. My background is in marketing, advertising, and brand management. I'm really looking forward. This seems like a really fantastic project and can't wait to work with all of you.
And we have as well other subcontractors that we'll be working with throughout this process. Horrox Engineers has a robust public involvement team that we work hand in glove with. And we have a creative director who will be helping with some of the branding as well. So with that, I will just go ahead and share my screen and just do a very brief presentation we've prepared for you. Okay. Can you all see the schedule slide?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So as you all know, we recently got under contract a few weeks ago, and we started immediately to initiate the development of a strategic communications plan for PAMSLA. And I just wanted to go over very high level the schedule that we have planned out with Alan for the next 5 to 6 months, specific to our tasks and activities. And then I will hit on a few of these near-term items in a little bit more detail through the course of the presentation. So you'll see, obviously project management and team coordination happens throughout this process. And we have been working with Alan and Aaron to initiate an internal coordination meeting so that we'll be in lockstep with them and to make sure that our communications efforts are very much supportive of the technical process. So developing a communications plan, as Representative Snow mentioned, we have had the opportunity to speak with a number of you so far and have really enjoyed that opportunity to meet with you virtually one-on-one and really hear and get your direction. And we'll again talk a little bit about that process here in a little bit. So you'll see though, with the schedule, we are working fast and furious. It's a very aggressive, compressed schedule with our communications efforts, but we want to have a draft communications plan that will help to guide our efforts by the end of the month. So if all of you should have heard from our team at this point. If you haven't, feel free to reach out. We've, I think, interviewed about 3/4 of you so far. And, really hope to get to all of you if you have the time and interest. So we are doing those key person interviews right now and getting your direction and developing the communications plan that will guide our efforts going forward. As part of this process, in an ideal world with unlimited resources and time, we would wait until that communications plan is fully developed out before initiating a brand new process. But, to April's question earlier, which I think was a really good one, we want to make sure that the public is engaged early and often. And so to do that, we want to make sure that we have the branding set up. I don't know about you, but I think that, calling us Palms Love, in the long term is probably not ideal. Like, we'd love to have a good name and a logo, visual identity that the public can over time see, visually recognize, the prison site and what we're doing there. So we hope to, and again, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but we hope to initiate that branding process with you as well and get your direction there as well. Once that branding process has been complete, we're thinking probably mid to late June, then we can start to infuse the various branding attributes developed into an online presence. So this would be a website and social media platforms, things like that. And then, of course, we'll do the bread and butter of actually implementing our plan. This is where that public outreach will come and various other strategies that we'll identify with you. One of those that's come through loud and clear in our interviews with you has been the creation potentially of stakeholder committees. How those are set up and how frequently they meet, what is their composition, those are all things that we'll want to work through with you. But we envision that if those were to occur, they would probably need to align with the scenarios that Aaron mentioned would be developed kind of late summer, early fall timeframe. And so we think it'll take some time to get those committees set up and then make sure that they're productive in terms of the input that we're looking for from them. You'll see here that last task in terms of public involvement, we anticipate potentially some early public involvement that's very, very limited, if at all, just related to the initial site surveying. If there are property owners that get contacted as we're kind of looking at the initial survey for the site, we just want to make sure that we have a good message to them about what we're doing. But really, the more robust public outreach and involvement would happen towards the end of the year. Before I move on, does anyone have any questions about this high-level schedule for the next 5-6 months? Okay. So you would have this process during our presentation through the proposal process, and just wanted to kind of recap. So right now, as I mentioned, we are in that early stage of developing a communications plan and soliciting qualitative research in these interviews with you and other stakeholders. So we'll have that very aggressive schedule over the next several weeks to incorporate your feedback into the establishment of overarching goals and measurable objectives, as well as the identification of audiences that we should be engaging with and key messages we should be conveying to them. And then the bread and butter, the meat and potatoes, is really the to-dos that come out of those goals and objectives. So the development of these various communication strategies, outreach techniques, and tactics. So we will hopefully have a draft communications plan buttoned up for you to review by the next board meeting. If you have been interviewed with us so far, then you will receive a transcription of that interview within a week so that you can review and approve that. Just as a reminder, I think we mentioned this during the interviews, but getting that input and having it recorded was really kind of for our internal purposes so that we can go back and really make sure that we're meaningfully taking your direction and incorporating it into the plan. So the communications plan will be a very dynamic, fluid, and working document that we will refine as we go, and it's really intended for our internal use. So we have seen you as really our first priority in getting your feedback, but we've also similarly reached out to other representatives to get a good representative sampling of feedback in a 360 view. These include state and local elected officials and staff, business leaders from chambers of commerce, as well as key companies in the area, community organizations, industry groups, as well as like our transportation partners and others. So like I say, we haven't gotten through the entire list of interviews just yet, but we feel like we have a good kind of baseline to work with based on the feedback we've received so far. What are we hearing? So as we do what we call coding of the open-ended, so essentially, what are some of those keywords that really pop out? What we've heard from you is that some of our key messages need to be really highlighting the fact that this is a generational opportunity, a once-in-a-lifetime project, and the risk is really that we don't think big enough, that this is global in scale and significance, so we need to keep that in mind in how we message to our audiences. In terms of stakeholders, you've mentioned technology companies, research institutions, universities, businesses. There's a lot of stakeholder groups to engage with. And strategies, you want to ensure that we make a collaborative approach, that this isn't some top-down directive to the local surrounding community, but you're working collaboratively with them, with our partners, and others. And to Aaron's point, there's been a lot of public outreach conducted during the visioning process, and we want to build on that. We think it's really important to communicate to the public that this has been a multi-year process to solicit meaningful feedback, and that this isn't just starting from scratch. But there are challenges, and here are some keywords that you've articulated during the course of our interviews, that transparency is paramount. One board member made a really good point that if we can't talk about it, we shouldn't be doing it. So, for example, we want to ensure that we're mitigating the perception that private sector developers are driving the decision making, or that things are happening behind closed doors. We want to make sure that through our communications efforts, things are transparent. We also need to, in our communications, address how we're mitigating unanticipated negative externalities like associated with site development, whether it be traffic congestion, air quality, impacts to the environment. These are some key concerns that you've brought up that we anticipate stakeholders will have. So how are we addressing those in our communications efforts? And with stakeholders, as I've mentioned, making sure that we are engaging with the surrounding community and that we are talking to the different stakeholder groups that would be impacted by or impact what we do at the site. Some strategies that could help to mitigate the challenges I just mentioned, you know, you guys have brought up in your interviews that this could be a collaborative effort with the transportation agencies. So there are already, a lot of great work that's being done, for example, with the UTA alternatives analysis. It's my understanding currently the agency is conducting a scientifically fielded stakeholder survey of residents in the geographic area being studied. So how can we kind of utilize efforts like that that are already going on and incorporate those into our communication strategy? And another challenge that you brought up was just making sure that we are productively using our time and resources. So if we, for example, set up a stakeholder, a set of stakeholder committees, how are we getting the right people at the table? How are we making sure that they are helping to provide the meaningful input that we absolutely need from the respective subject matter experts representing industry or higher education? Okay, and then I mentioned the branding process. So we hope to initiate this fairly quickly so that we have, you know, the visuals and the logo and the name associated with the site. It'll help, I think, folks to really wrap their head around and become more familiar with what we're doing if they have a visual reference as well as a name. So with that, we would propose a branding workshop with you. In an ideal world, this would be a in-person, perhaps half-day workshop where we really, get your feedback, put stuff up, sticky notes up on walls and, things like that. But we just don't have the luxury of that given COVID-19. So we think perhaps instead we could do like a two-hour virtual meeting, utilizing online engagement tools and kind of get your feedback that way. Because we really don't want to go down a path of starting to create any visual identity without getting your ideas first. And that's my presentation.
Thank you so much, Muriel and team, for joining with us. So we'll turn some time now to board members for questions about your presentation or about your work going forward. Any questions from the board? Well, I have one, Muriel, maybe to get things started off a little bit. You heard Aaron's presentation before yours, and I'm assuming and believe that the background information that you're going to receive from stakeholders and others having an interest, that all of that will be made available to Aaron so they can take that into account in the work that they're doing, that there would be some level of collaboration.
Absolutely. Yeah, Aaron and I are going to quickly become best friends, albeit remotely. So we do have on the books like a weekly coordination meeting together with Alan, and we'll definitely be working in lockstep together, because as much as they presumably will want to have the public input and the various stakeholder input, we will also want to make sure that we are conveying to our various audiences what they're doing, right? And so, you know, the way that we do our communications at X Factors, we're very heavily reliant on subject matter experts and making sure that we're supportive in how we're communicating based on, what they say their timeline is, the substance of their work.
Just a follow-up. In the outreach that you're engaged in interviewing stakeholders that goes beyond members of the board, what's the breadth of that? Or maybe a better question is, can you give us an example of what kinds of individuals that you're seeking input from? And if that has started, is there what level of interest by those providing that information to you?
Absolutely. So just to give you an idea, we've met recently with Derek Miller, President and CEO of the Salt Lake Chamber. He provided some really great feedback for us, representing essentially the business community. We have met recently with a couple Draper, have a great pulse on the local community and residents. We have, Alan's been with me every step of the way here, so Alan, feel free to chime in as well. We do have on our calendar an interview scheduled with the executive directors of the two metropolitan planning organizations, so WFRC and MAG. We think it'd be really good to get their feedback as well. We're not going to...
UTA.
That's right. Yeah, we've interviewed with Kent Millington, representing Utah County on the board for UTA, and are trying to get a similar interview scheduled with Carlton Christensen, who represents Salt Lake County and who's the chair of the board.
Great. If you would consider a recommendation, if you might reach out to some of the technology company heads. I'm thinking of Jonathan at Adobe or someone like that that may be able to give you some input as well.
Absolutely. Yep. And totally open to feedback. So we do have Adobe on our list, but have not yet reached out to them. So we'll reach out to Jonathan. We were similarly thinking maybe like Pluralsight.
That'd be a great pick, especially given their proximity to the site. Okay. Any other questions or comments from the board?
In the past, Alan and I met with Domo, and we also both spoke with, and Alan has met with Pluralsight, just to kind of talk about what they're doing in the area so that we're not like competing or battling each other. Alan, do you want to talk about that for a second?
Well, I know our time's running short, but it's a good question. I did have some good conversations with Pluralsight. They're very much in line with what we're doing. See our project as being supportive of what they're doing. We'd like to coordinate on transportation. I've been reaching out to Silicon Slopes, and we've got some contacts there. We're trying to put together a group of the technical community, the tech community, and get their input on what would be their vision for the area. So I think those kinds of suggestions that you made are great, and they're certainly on our minds, and we're going to be following up.
Yeah, thank you, Muriel. Alan and I also went down to Silicon Slopes to their office in Lehigh and met with them a few months back. And then the founder of Qualtrics, and I spoke a little bit when we were at the Silicon Slopes convention. So all of the tech companies are fairly interested in what we're doing.
Muriel, thank you very much for joining us, and again, your team for being here, and we look forward to having an ongoing relationship with you and hearing back from you often, especially as you move to this these next phases. And
thank
I think
you.
You're going to find some interest in board members and participating in the branding group. So thank you.
Okay.
The next item on the agenda is the Clyde Company presentation. We welcome Jared Morgan from GWC Capital. Jared, I already gave you a bit of an introduction to begin with, so with that, we'll just turn the time to you for your presentation.
Okay, thank you so much. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, and I think we have your slide up as well.
Yeah, Tyler's going to be helping me through the slide presentation, so thank you so much to her for helping me with that. Thank you, Representative Snow and Lieutenant Governor Cox, for the opportunity. Alan and I have met a number of times. We sit on a couple of committees together, and I'm really excited to present to you today. This has been a very collaborative effort for me and my team over the last 2 years, and this is a box that I've been wanting to check for quite some time. Because what Aaron just and Muriel have been describing over the last hour has been very much the same process that we've been going through. We've sat down with UTA, UDOT, Silicon Slopes, WFRC, MAG, Jonathan at Adobe. I mean, we've kind of run the gamut through all of the necessary parties we feel that we need to reach out to in order to gather input on our plan. So can you go to the next slide, Tyler? I just wanted, the purpose of today, we want to show you what some of the surrounding areas are doing from a development standpoint. To give you an idea of the size of our property at the point of the mountain, we have about 1,000 acres at the point. We have about 600 acres within the Draper city limits, and we have 400 acres within Bluffdale city limits. We're annexing property into the municipality of Lehigh here in the next 30 days. Sorry, my light just turned off behind me. We want to just give you an idea of what's happening just to the south of you. Want to share with you maybe what our vision might be of how our sites could work together and not compete with one another, as April alluded to earlier. So want to walk you through the reclamation plan and just show you what our land use plan looks like. So Alan, how much time do I have? Because I can cut a couple things out if I need to be quick.
We want you to be able to share what you have. If you could wrap up by, let's say, about 20 after, would that work?
Yeah, that should be fine. Okay, Tyler, next slide. So this is just an aerial image of our operation. Some of the land you see here is Staker Parson and Kilgore, some of our others in our industry. But this is an aerial view looking to the northeast of our pit. The majority of this is within Draper City. This is part of our current operation. This is the active mine that Geneva Rock has there at the point of the mountain. GWC Capital, we are the land development arm for Clyde Companies. And so what you're about to see has been a joint effort on a master planning process for our 1,000 acres just to the south of your site. This pit provides a lot of critical infrastructure materials to the economy, and we see this pit as a key economic indicator internally at the Clyde Companies is how the economy is doing. And last year was a very good year for this pit and the product that came out of it. Not as good as 2007, but we're inching up to a lot of product coming out of the pit that's going into home foundations, building roadways. It's a critical piece of the economy, but we do want to show you that we're mining with a plan, and I want to articulate that plan for you today. So next slide. So Wilfred Clyde has probably articulated this better than I can, but the last two sentences there I think are important to read. Today's mining and tomorrow's land reclamation are top priorities for Clyde Companies. These initiatives run parallel to each other. This will establish long-term sustainability in our business and in Utah's economic growth. So, we have a long-term vision for what's going on, and it started with Wilfred, and it's kind of, gone down through the ranks. And so everyone, what you're about to see, everyone has seen at Clyde Companies, and they understand that this is the vision for our 1,000 acres at the point. Next slide. Just to give you, an idea, this is Gardner Institute, a map showing, 2065 population growth. I mean, you all know how much Utah is going to grow over the next, 30 years. But the red counties, Salt Lake and Utah County, is where most of the density is going to be located, and our 1,000 acres is right in the heart of all that. Just gives a good perspective of how important our piece is and your piece is to the future growth of Utah. So next slide. I want to demonstrate the reclamation plan for Bluffdale. So this is our 400 acres in Bluffdale. So there's currently a 200 foot elevation difference between the bottom of the pit and I-15. Red is active mining, and as we mine through the years, we will be reclaiming the ground. All the byproduct of the mine in Draper is going to be filling up the west side, and it's going to be filled up to a developable grade. So we will be bringing it up about 200 feet, and we'll be engineering that material to be built upon. Next slide. So this is a long-term vision of what you see, of what you could potentially see. This is depicting what we feel like the market could absorb today. And some comments have been brought, been made today, which are interesting, right? Like, how much commercial real estate are we going to need in the future if so many of us are working virtually like we are today? And so obviously this plan has the ability to change. We just feel like this is a good depiction of what we could bring to the market today. Again, to the left of the gray line in the middle is I-15. To the left of it is Luffdale. To the right of it with the reservoir is Draper. The reason why you see the reservoir is because we are permitted to go fairly deep right there, and we've been working with engineering firms to develop a secondary water source for the surrounding municipalities, potentially even your development, with that reservoir. It's roughly 100 acres at the surface, and it could potentially go a couple hundred feet deep. And we intend to move towards that type of land use in the future, and we're mining towards it right now. The lower half of this of that image, I've circled a development that I just want to touch on really briefly, just to prove that what we're planning, we're already implementing. That is within Lehigh City, the Lehigh City limits, and again, we'll be annexed in the next 30 days. We've been working with UTA on a tracks line, the blue line extension, and we have earmarked this as a blue line station. This would be the second to last station before Adobe on that extension. Next slide. So we've begun to craft the site plan. We have 100 townhomes, 300 apartments, a track station, 400,000 square feet of commercial office, a church site. This site has already been reclaimed. It was an old pit. It's been reclaimed, and we are now developing on it. And I think is a good testament to the process that we're implementing at Clyde Companies. Tyler, would you go next to the 3D flyover instead of the still image? So this is just a 3D rendering of what we envision. You're looking at Bluffdale right now in the retail center for Bluffdale, with a lot of the higher density closer to the freeway. And we're going to pan to the east. We're looking at this is a little pixelated, but we're looking at the reservoir and at our commercial area that we have planned within Draper. Some of the municipalities have adopted these transportation plans into their long-range plan. We do have an off-ramp at 160th South, which would be new. That's okay. You can go back to the slide deck now. We're very excited to be your neighbors. We want to be a collaborative partner with you. We're working towards what you see here, and are already implementing various periphery pieces of the plan, and hope to engage with you more as both sites move forward in development. So that's all I have, Alan.
Thank you very much, Jared. Let's go to board members. Any questions of Jared?
Yeah, Larry, I have a question. Jared, that was absolutely fascinating. So to the west of I-15, which you called the TOD development at the point. So that's going to be annexed into Lehigh. So that's underway. That's going. And so the pit has been reclaimed, right? And so it's ready for the kind of development that you're giving us kind of an overview. I'll let you answer that. But the second question is, on the east side, what is the timetable on the east side when mining, maybe you said this and I missed it, when mining will be completed and you will move forward with a commercial development, the reservoir and so forth? How far out is that?
Yeah. So to answer your first question, what I showed you, the transit-oriented development, that's 55 of the 1,000 acres at the point of the mountain for us. So that's our southernmost piece of the 1,000 acres. We're going to be carving that off and annexing it in to Lehigh. So that is just a small periphery piece of the larger scale. Second answer to your question is 20 plus years is what we define as the remaining life for really the heart of the mining operation on the east side. And truly, most of the aggregates that are coming out of the pit do come from the east side of the freeway. But the byproduct of those aggregates is what's going to help us reclaim and fill up the west side. So
vertical. That was terrific. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thanks, Steve. Any other comments or questions from the board? Not hearing any other questions. Jared, thank you very much for sharing those plans with us. I think that helps a great deal to give us an idea of what potentially that project's going to look like and how it relates to the point of the mountain. So we appreciate it, and the time may come when we invite your group back again to update us. So thank you. So the next item on the agenda, I'm going to turn some time to Alan Matheson on some plans that he would like to advise the board about. But with your permission, I'm going to take one item out of turn, just to quickly remind board members that we have an obligation under the law to complete our nonprofit board member training. On April 14th, Alan sent us an email giving us the site where that we need to go to take that training. The law is pretty clear that if we don't get that accomplished, we are in jeopardy of losing our seat. And maybe some of you think that's okay, but most of you, I think, don't want that to happen. I don't want it to happen. So if you can find that email, and if you can't locate it, if you would let Alan know, he can send that to you again. Some of you have already taken the training and completed it. Some of us haven't, and we need to get that taken care of. So with that, Alan, I'd like to just turn the remainder of the meeting over for some of the points that you would like to cover as our director.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Snow, and thanks, Jared, for coming and presenting. I think it's important that you know how supportive and collaborative Jared and the whole team at Clyde Companies has been, and I think together we can help create really an amazing regional community at this site. And I hope you're as excited as I am about our consultants. X-Factor and RCLCO are great, and I think we're going to accomplish a lot of good together. I want to, first of all, get your input on an idea and potentially your approval. I think all of us are anxious to see if we can start design at the site. We want to answer the questions that others have. We want to answer the question in our own mind as to what this is going to look like. And there are some steps that have to happen first. First, we need the analytical foundation, and that's what RCLCO is working on. And then we need the public foundation, and X-Factor is helping us with that. Aaron mentioned earlier that we would probably be starting with some design work and get a design team on board, master plan, later in the fall. We've learned from our experience to date that sometimes that solicitation process takes a long time. So I'm coming to you for early approval to start so that we can move ahead without any undue delay. Now, let me be clear first. Today, I'm not asking for your approval to hire a design team that will put together the master plan. I'm also not asking you to identify a substitute for HOK, the firm that's working with RCLCO on their planning effort. They're kind of giving a planning eye to the technical analysis that's being done. What I am proposing is to see if we could bring an expert on board serving almost as a project management staffer for us that has really good expertise in planning and design. Somebody that could help us think through the process for selecting the right design firm that has contacts in the field, could help put together the RFP, help with interviews, selection, oversee some of the work of the design team from an expert standpoint. So let me just tell you where this idea came from. It's not just an abstract idea, but several weeks ago, I had the opportunity to meet an internationally recognized planning expert. He's got a 40-year career, worked on some of the biggest master plans, most well-known master plans in the United States and around the world, and has a good reputation. He's done work on innovation hubs, the kind of things that we're looking at. He said he would be happy to help us with site visits, help us get in touch with and target the best design firms in the world, provide sort of a synergy with RCLCO. I think right brain, left brain, as we do the technical analysis with some of the visioning and look big picture. I had a chance to kind of do some research on this individual and talk to people that have worked with him for decades. And one said, without question, he's absolutely one of the best minds in community design and architecture. He has a truly remarkable ability to see 3D perspective and how projects work at the human scale. Said he's very, very, very bright. Great collaborator and mentor. So he proposed coming on a retainer at, frankly, an amount that would be less than if we were going to hire some new planner come and be on our staff. Now, let me be clear. I'm not saying we hire this individual at this point because we have to go through a public competitive, transparent process, and we would do that. I just share that background so that you are aware of this kind of opportunity to potentially bring on some significant experienced talent at a pretty reasonable rate to help us think through the design side of things and partner with our other consultants as we move ahead. So maybe I'll just end there and say, I guess again, what I'm asking is, since I need approval to start an engagement or a solicitation process that would be over $50,000, I wanted to see if we could get your approval so that when the right time comes, if the right time comes, I'm ready to act and we don't slow down our process.
May I make one comment, if it's all right, Alan? Alan has talked to me a little bit about this situation. I think this is the closest we can come to having this kind of expertise in-house without having someone in-house as officially employed staff. And so I think there is still a bit of a gap between RCLCO and this really fine, close planning that we're talking about. So I only tell you that because I think Alan has a good idea. I think it's filling that gap would be really helpful to the work of our board. So I'll be quiet now, but Any comments from the board, either in support or concerns?
I've got a comment. I guess I'm a little bit confused what you're asking approval for, because it sounded a little bit like blanket approval to, maybe you can help me understand a little more clearly what you're asking us to approve you to move forward doing.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I appreciate that. I can't go forward with any contract over $50,000 without board approval. So I'm seeking board approval to start the solicitation process through state procurement to, you know, do a competitive RFP process, with reviews by a board subcommittee, and have the board ultimately select whoever the right candidate is. But at this point, I'm just asking for approval that at the right time, sometime in the next couple of months probably, I'd be able to start that solicitation process. I wouldn't be selecting the individual, that's a board decision, but I'd at least be able to get the process going so that we're not behind the curve.
But this is for an individual to help guide you through it. It's not for the firm. Is that what you're saying? Or could it be either?
Yes, and this individual would help us through the process of selecting the appropriate firm, has contacts, you know, somebody that could help us identify targeted firms, go through a process that would get us, help us ask the right questions, get the right talent pool, and that's probably something that we would need to start in the fall.
Okay. I would just mention that when you get into master planning and this type of world, it's probably more DFCM's world than it is state purchase, and we would be willing to help you out with that procurement.
I would love that, Jim. I think that'd be great.
Hey, Alan, this is Val Hale. This is kind of a related question. You know, we've been asked to go through an exercise with budget cuts of 2, 5, and 10%. I don't know if that would be in the same exercise, but how do you see the... are there potential budget cuts in the offing for the Point of the Mountain Land Authority, or have you been told that you're going to remain harmless? We do have the co-chair of executive appropriations on the board, which should be a good thing.
It should be. And actually, that was on my agenda for the director's report that I was going to cover next, but I can jump into it briefly. And by the way, Senator Stevenson sent me a text saying he got caught up in meetings and couldn't make it, so I'll update him tomorrow. Yes, all state agencies, including Point of the Mountain State Land Authority, have been asked to go through a budget exercise to determine what the impacts of a 2%, 5%, and 10% budget cut would be for the organization. And I've submitted that analysis. In conversation with the legislative fiscal analyst, they said our baseline would be the $1 million ongoing that was appropriated, so a $20,000, $50,000, or $100,000 cut. You might recall that we've got one-time money of 3.385 on top of that. So yes, that's something that I'm very sensitive about. I think that the result would be, if we did a cut, we would draw more quickly on that one-time money, and it would run out faster. But we'd be able for the next 2+ years, well, about 3 years, have funding that would allow us to move forward with the plans as we've outlined to this point. I recognize the uncertainty, and I think before we entered into any additional contracts, we should at that point know what the extent of any cut might be.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thanks, Val, for those questions and comments. You have an idea what Alan is looking for in terms of authority to start the process. So the entertain a motion if you are supportive of him beginning that process to look for this kind of help with planning.
This is Val. I make that motion.
Thank you, Val.
I'll second it.
And seconded by Jim. The motion is to allow our director to work with, I think, your department, Jim, in starting that process to do a search. Is that correct, Alan? Is that what you're looking for?
That's correct.
Any discussion to that motion?
Yeah, Lowry, I do have a question that has occurred to me. So Alan, as you were teeing this up with us, it's pretty clear that you have someone in mind that you've found. But we understand that you've got to go through a public process, post the notice, find the consultant. So you may or may not hire, you may or may not engage because it would be, you know, a board decision, this particular person you have in mind. But you have someone in mind, right?
Well, let me just be clear. I don't have anyone that I would select at this point. I think we need to go through a process and see if there's someone that's a better fit, and the board will make that decision, as you said. But I have been approached by an individual, and the information he provided, the model that he's using to serve other clients in a similar way, seemed like a really good fit that would allow us to get very high level support at a pretty reasonable price.
Okay, we'll just cross that bridge when we come to it. So thanks. I'm in support of the motion.
Thank you, Steve. Further discussion from the board?
Yes, this is April. Alan, I appreciate it because I think that that may not have been a position or something that we thought we needed right away. And even if it doesn't turn out to be this person that brought it up, I think it's good that you have your eyes and ears open and you're taking this kind of input from those people, because that's kind of sparking ideas so that we don't miss the boat. So I think you're right that this has kind of sparked an idea of we may need this project manager position. And then if it routes to where the person that sparked that idea initially ends up being the winner, then great. And if it, you know, happens to be someone else, then that's okay too. But I think it's good that you have your eyes and ears out there and you're throwing out these ideas to us that we may not be thinking about.
And let me just be clear, you know, the process to get our other consultants took 2+ months, 3 months. And so if we start this in August or September, we're going to already be behind the schedule that our CLCO outlined. So I just want to make sure that we can start the process now, keep the ball rolling. If we need to pull the plug at any time, we can do that. But if we get someone like this in place that could help us over the summer, outline the process, and then start looking for the appropriate design consultant who will actually put together the master plan, will be able to meet that time frame.
Alan, can I ask you a question? Do you know about how much this person would cost? Does it fit under $100,000 small purchases threshold for professional services that can be direct awarded?
You know, again, I don't have a specific proposal, but just very informally kind of said probably do it for somewhere in the range of $7,500 a month, which would work out to $90,000 a year.
This is April. I have one more question. Is any of this, though, stuff that we've already hired RCLCO to do so that we're not duplicating efforts? Are they supposed to be working on the map, on the design, or is this person more a project manager, just a liaison to make sure that our board and RCLCO are working together right? If it's just flat out we're hiring them for design, I feel like we've already hired RCLCO for some of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And I think the real issue here is making sure that we're not overlapping, that it's synergistic and not duplicative. And RCLCO is going to be doing the research, the analysis, kind of the technical work, they've got HOK to help them think through ideas, but at some point we're going to have to hire a master planner group that can come in and design the master plan for this area. And that's not part of our CLCO's scope. So that's down the road. This individual would kind of help help communicate among these consultants, our CLCO and the planners, help provide us some expertise in-house.
Does that person's work end when the master planner is selected? Are you foreseeing this going past that point?
No, I think that's something that we could talk about. I could see a need for it going beyond that point to kind of help review plans. As I said, this is an individual, again, I'm speaking of an example, a concrete example, who has actually put pen to paper and designed these kinds of sites in the past. So some of the folks I talked to said, and even though it may not be paid for it, he's doing some drawing on the side, coming up with ideas, brainstorming with master planners, evaluating the plans that come in from an expert standpoint, identifying potential problems that might not have been seen before.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions from the board?
I would just make one comment. I think that moving past the master planning and I don't think I understand or know how we're going to develop this property. And I would think that getting to the master planning and getting RCLCO's work in place and understanding the process from there would be important before we would lock in long-term for somebody who was going to be our construction manager or project manager or whatever. So it just seems to me like it would be better to hire this person to get us off the ground and assist us to getting to that master planner direction, and then at some point understanding what we need for the long term, because this person may not have the exact skill set that matches what we're going to do long term. That's just a comment.
Thank you, Jim.
Comment, Jim, and I'll just say that the intent is not that this be the project manager over construction, but kind of project manager to help make sure that we get the right design, get it refined to the right point, and that it accomplishes what we want it to. And absolutely, we would need additional skill sets to be project manager over the actual construction and implementation.
So I guess my point is, I'm not sure whether we will be designing or constructing the actual work or just master planning. And that's kind of my point. I don't know what we need past that point.
Right. Right. And I think that that's part of the analysis that RCLCO is going through, you know, some of the decisions that this board is going to have to make over coming months.
Thank you. Let me remind the board where we are. There's a motion on the table that we give our director authority to move forward on the process. Let me remind you that while Alan has talked about an individual, we're really only voting on a process to go forward to seek an individual that has the kind of credentials that Alan's speaking of, or that kind of a skill set. So any further discussion on the motion that's pending? Not hearing any more. The motion has been made and seconded, so we'll call for a vote. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Late. Sorry, I couldn't unmute.
Thank you. Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. And so, Alan, thanks for your willingness to take that on, and we'll look for updates as we move forward on that.
Okay. Now, let me just check in with you, Representative Snow. I've got a little director's report, six or seven items that I could go through very fast in about 5 or 7 minutes. But we're over time, and if it would be easier, I could draft those up and just send them out to everybody. It's kind of up to the board whether you want to stick around for a few more minutes.
Sure. So is that something you could complete here in 5 to 7 minutes?
Yes.
Is there anyone that cannot stay for that period? Then with that support, Alan, let's have you move forward and then we'll move to adjourn.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I cannot stay. I have a Facebook Live event that starts in just a minute that I have to log into. So I apologize, Alan, that I am going to have to bow out. I'd rather listen to your presentation than have to do this Facebook Live. Nonetheless, I do have to. So apologies.
We understand.
Thank you.
So Don, let me ask you, is it okay if Alan gets back with you later and he can update you?
That
okay.
would be great.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I'm going to go very fast then, and you can ask questions if you want. First thing, board appointments. 3 members of our board had terms that lapsed or ended last week. I worked with the governor, the speaker of the House, and the president of the Senate, and they have all reappointed, respectively, April Cooper, Representative Snow, and Glad will be continuing to serve with you for another term.
Thank you.
Number two, Horrocks Engineering has been engaged by DFCM, Jim's group, to conduct a site assessment. They're trying to, by the end of July, kind of complete archaeological assessment, review the topography of the site, and document that, look at underground utilities, environmental, and do a limited soil survey. That process is underway. I've agreed with Jim that they're going to fund that up front, and then we will need to reimburse them for that work, and that's just under $100,000. So that we'll probably discuss that in our next board meeting. The third thing was that budget reduction exercise. I think I covered that. Fourth, the transit alternative analysis is underway. They've completed level one, which was doing an overall view of various scenarios to refine the questions that need to be addressed in more detail. So UTA and their consulting team are now starting level two analysis on 5 scenarios. It's kind of light rail and bus rapid transit down the east side of Draper, light rail and bus rapid transit along the west side of I-15 through the prison site, and then another one that just connects existing lines to the front runner. That should be wrapped up by late summer, heading into an EIS process on the preferred alternative. And we've got some initial funding to start that. There's still a lot of detailed questions that need to be resolved. As Erin mentioned earlier, she's spending some time with her team on looking at how these scenarios might affect potential anchors to our site and how important are different modes of transportation and routes. So we'll be looking at that more. Next, University of Utah administration has contacted me and said they're working on some specific proposals for how they might participate in research or other elements of the Point of the Mountain. So we'll see more on that. Working with Draper on an interlocal agreement, and I've talked to David Dobbins, their city administrator, and their attorneys are kind of working on a first draft. So we'll try to make sure that we define that relationship between the authority and Draper so that we don't have surprises down the road. Then 2 things quickly. One, the Gardner Policy Institute, with some funding from the legislature, created a roadmap for air quality and addressing climate change in Utah. One of the recommendations was to build an air quality research center in Utah that would provide cutting-edge air quality research to the nation. We've had some conversations with them, and they're interested in putting that center on our site. they've offered one of their staff members to put in time to help evaluate that possibility. So today or you know, in the next few days, maybe I can follow up with an email. I'd like a sense for whether you believe that's something that we should be pursuing. And then the last thing I'll mention, I had a conversation last week with Bruce Katz, who's recognized internationally as one of the best minds in regional economic development. He's the founder of a group called the Global Institute for Innovation Districts that is exploring innovation districts around the world and what works and what doesn't. I tracked him down. He was really interested in what we're doing. He said, quote, SLC or Salt Lake City is perfect for this. He said, 700 acres is the perfect size, especially with transit going through it. He also said that we're at a key point where there's a good chance there will be federal funding for R&D to try to help us get out of the economic malaise, and thinks that those regions that position themselves well can get some funding for developing research centers. So that's something we can look at. And I'll just say, he, as I said, was interested. He's sending me information. He said he'd be happy to get us in touch with any of the other innovation districts around the world that we wanted to visit and learn anything we can from them. So I'm just excited that some of the worldwide experts now have us on their radar screen and are willing to help us succeed. That's my report, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Alan. And I know we're past time, but are there any quick comments or questions to address to Alan before we close up here?
Yeah, I have a quick comment for all of you and Alan. You know, regarding the Utah roadmap, I've been watching this and engaged and involved with this for since its release on January 6th, and thinking about lots of things there. And regarding the climate, air quality and climate changing laboratory, I think it's a terrific idea. In fact, so today is the first day I've been waiting for today, the first day that we could open bill file. So I've opened a bill file regarding that, Alan, to request a feasibility study about the lab. Had no thinking about where it would or would not be located, but I just got to say, I really like the thinking that's going on, the discussion here. But so I've got a bill going to look at the feasibility study regarding that one recommendation.
Excellent. That's great.
Thank you, Steve. Any other comments? Before I take a motion to adjourn, let me thank you all for being here. For those who presented, thank you so much for your time and your expertise. For board members, thank you for being here and being engaged in this work. And Alan, thank you for your leadership and your guidance. It helps us do our job a whole lot better. So with that, is Val still with us?
I'm here. Yes, I'm here.
I told you I wouldn't forget you. You have a final motion.
Let's motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Non-debatable. All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you all. We stand adjourned.
Thanks.